Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 881. Let's check in with the Nerdist Community Corkboard right off the bat. Punk band Roswell Kid has a new album out. It's called Precious Art. It's available now on iTunes, Spotify, Bandcamp, pretty much everywhere you can find your music digitally. Speaking of digitally, Reddit user Digital Chicanery writes, "My wife started a theater production company here in San Jose, California. Was just there, fine city, to benefit charities around the world. We've got a stage reading of The Diary of Anne Frank coming up Sunday, benefiting USA for UNHCR, and a full production of Extremities opening July 6th, running through July 22nd, which will benefit the YWCA and their work with victims of sexual violence. All net proceeds," and then it says parenthetically, "after licensing fees, everyone working on these productions is volunteer," close parentheses, "will go straight to the charities they support. We're still working on getting a website, but if you're interested, more info can be found at facebook.com/WOKEAFSJ. All right, this episode is Will Ferrell, who I have the pleasure with of working over at Funny or Die from time to time, as they are executive producers of the At Midnight program. This is Will's second appearance, and it's very obvious for me to say he's one of the funniest people in all of entertainment, but he also happens to be super nice. Like, if he was a dick, I'd go, you know what, I get it, you can be a dick, you're that funny, but he's not at all. He's a terrific gentleman, and he cracks me up just in person. Just in person, he's hilarious. I think I spend most of this time just laughing all the way through. Some words come out. I form sentences from time to time. But that's just in between taking breaths of uproarious laughter. I don't know why I said it that way, but I just felt like I had to. Uproarious laughter. He's promoting The House, which is with Amy Poehler, which is in theaters June 30th, so you should go see that. This episode is brought to you by Blue Apron. Listen, picnics, potlucks, dinner parties, barbecues, good food is essential to a successful summer. And now you can create easy, delicious summer meals with Blue Apron, because for less than $10 a meal, they're going to deliver seasonal recipes along with pre-portioned ingredients right to your door. You don't have to, just scoop all the guesswork out. Just take the guesswork and just throw it in your, don't recycle it because you don't want someone else to have to guess. So just compost it, I guess. Yeah, let the earth deal with it. But it's completely flexible. You can customize your recipes each week, choose a delivery option that fits your needs, and the freshness is guaranteed. That's the promise that every ingredient will arrive ready to cook or they will make it right. So just some sample meals, seared chicken, creamy pasta salad, summer squash and sweet peppers, or creamy shrimp rolls with quick pickles and sweet potato wedges, or fresh basil fettuccine pasta with sweet corn and Cubanelle pepper. So check out this week's menu. Get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/nerdist. You are going to love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait. And I think it's great just to not have to expend any mental energy on what you're going to eat that day. I know that sounds weird, but when your life needs to be run very efficiently, that really helps. That's blueapron.com/nerdist. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. Here's Nerdist Podcast number 881 with Will Ferrell. Katie, roll the thing. Roll the thing. Uproarious rolling laughter.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
No, I always dress up for podcasts.
I wish I did.
Now I feel bad.
Cool.
Then I'm, hey, how's it going?
You're very underdressed.
This is not reasonable on my end at all.
Look at your in-house operation.
Yeah, well, this is, I don't know if you ever came in this way, but my dressing room is in there, and that connects to the At Midnight stage. So, yeah.
So I'm sorry.
Yeah.
How's it going?
Good. The only other time we did it was you guys were still over at...
we were at the comic book store.
Yeah.
But when I started doing this show, it was just impossible to go anywhere else. So we just do it here. At Midnight is a show that
You know what? It's a show... Yeah. I produce, technically.
I mean, that is technically true. It's a Funny or Die show.
Yeah.
It is a Funny or Die show.
Have you appreciated my presence at the show?
You know, sometimes I find it a little impressive.
Well,
it's like I
have to be on top of things.
It's like, you know, every... Do you have to say points like that? Could you just say it like this? Like, yeah, okay, Will, you know, we got to come in and get the Will notes.
I'm a stickler.
I mean, it's amazing that you find time to give notes on every episode. It's a four-day-a-week show.
I come in once a week and dress you guys down.
It's really...
So that you can build yourselves back up.
Well,
and look at the results.
Yeah, I mean, right? I guess that works, you know.
How many seasons now?
Four seasons.
Yep.
Yeah, we've been four seasons.
Thanks to me.
Well, it's all, yeah, it is. It is thanks to you.
Even though you thought of the idea.
No, I didn't actually think of the idea. I just came in and, you know, but it would not be, I don't think the show would be what it is.
Without your constant input. Exactly.
And so,
what my obsessive.
What network is that show on?
Compulsive. A lot of times I just give you wardrobe notes.
Wardrobe
constant,
notes,
yeah.
Less ties, more ties. Yeah.
Your hair was too spiky, not spiky enough.
Try a headband. Yeah.
Maybe an eye patch.
Do an eye patch this time. What about a pirate episode?
And I give a lot of like, get that one guy back. He's really funny.
And I always say, I don't know what guy you're talking about. Yeah, you're the guy.
Get the guy back.
You just seem to get madder the less I know what you're talking about. So you've broken a lot of things.
I'm like a real producer.
Yeah, you're like a real producer. Super coked up.
It's like, and non-specific vague notes.
Yeah, I mean, yes. It's like I've never seen someone punch themselves in the dick so many times. Like, get a fucking,
come on,
wear the headband.
Do it.
Do what I say. It's funny because I was talking to Joe Farrell about you.
Right.
The other Farrell.
Sweet Joe Farrell.
Sweet Joe Farrell.
Yeah.
And just about how like unaffected you are by the business and by everything, and just like still.
It's starting to make me feel self-conscious.
Is it?
No, not, but it is funny that, yeah, people are waiting for the other shoe to drop and, you know, are kind of like, what's the trick here? What's going on? There's got to be some sort of loophole.
And there isn't.
And there really isn't, you know, just that, you know, I think, kind of have always never taken for granted the work that we all get to do and the fact that it's so hard to get there, and, you know, kind of had a glimpse of that growing up with my dad being a musician and kind of seeing like, oh, that's not easy to do day in and day out. So, you know, I think I had a very realistic perspective kind of going into all this. So,
but it's really healthy because I think maybe Anna Gasteyer said, oh, yeah, you know, if we ever did a sketch on SNL and if the sketch didn't land, Will had a great attitude. He would just come off stage and go, well, we really stunk up the joint, and then just move on to the next thing. Like without any negative, like it was just like, oh, well, we gave it a shot.
That was, you know, one of the best encounters I had early on at SNL was sitting at an after party with Kevin Nealon.
Mm-hmm.
And he was so nice, came up and said hi. He's like, you're funny. You're also tall. Tall guys do well. And on the show. I go, okay, good. We joked around with each other for a while. And then he's like, you know what, though? Here's the whole secret. You just need about 8 to 10 things to land throughout the course of a season. And the rest doesn't matter. As long as you can look back and there was like 8 funny things you did. I was like, gosh, you're right. It's like a baseball player, you know.
Yeah.
If you hit 300, which is, you're still failing 70% of the time.
Absolutely.
You're going to be in the Hall of Fame. So I just kept thinking, oh, that's not a bad approach. That, and I made, Adam McKay and I always talk about this, I made a point to tell all the writers, like, hey, you know how you sometimes just need a guy to deliver the pizza in the sketch? I'm happy to play the pizza guy. Because I found that even like a 2-line little part where you could just have a weird attitude or wear a headband.
Yep.
Like I'm always on your case for
PTSD.
Start wearing
notes.
I would sometimes find a way to get a stupid laugh just off of a small little thing. And so I thought, oh, just, you know, there's always opportunities.
That's
so
smart.
Yeah. And then it worked because there were other, some, you know, along the way, kind of environment is ego charged. Some people would be like, I'm not going to just come in and read 2 lines in your sketch. No, I want to play the main part.
Right.
And I was like, oh no, don't turn those things down. You can, there was, do you know Norm Hiscock? Do you know?
Yeah, right? I
know. Yeah. Yeah. Norm wrote a sketch where it was like, something, the sketch was just where people were playing beach volleyball, and I was literally an off-camera voice that just every fourth beat would go, beach volleyball! Sketch, 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 sketch. Beach volleyball! And I said it about 10 times, and would just get a laugh every single time. So I was like, okay, that's a good thing to remember.
That's so sharp, because it really is... Because when you think about how competitive that environment must be for stage time and oh, I got to lock in and get my character and then my movie and then the...
And then here we go and just
What's my thing? What's my Dieter from Sprockets?
Hit 300 or even 270.
That's incredible. That is an incredible way to approach that. And also because I think with everything in life, everyone really grades themselves on a complete like 0 or 100%.
Yeah, for sure.
And it's okay to like... Yeah. The mid-range, you can still get some success.
Now, I have to footnote it by saying I think I was able to have that approach because we all – the year we came in, it was a brand new cast. Now, had I been – you know, some of these years you see one person just piecemealed in.
Right.
And that's when you're desperately trying to
– claw your way through the noise. Yeah.
But we were forced – Lorne Michaels was forced to use all of us at one time. For better or for worse.
I just did this thing at NBC for Red Nose Day, and we shot stuff at 8H.
Okay.
And so I was like, my dressing room for the day was like right off the hallway. And so all day long, you know,
it's
we were
an
on
intimidating place, right?
It is.
It's super small.
It's so much smaller than you
but
think.
But then it's also like, ooh, it's kind of exciting but intimidating all at the same time. Yeah.
I mean, it's like almost like the walls are haunted with decades of – and you just feel it. And you can feel all of it like, oh my God. And then, and when you think about it too much, it's overwhelming.
Right, right, right.
Oh, this happened here. Yeah, and then the one time
– You can't.
Yeah, but it was –
You can't do it.
But seeing all of the cast's group shots all the way down the hallway, I mean, the history is so overwhelming.
And that was – because – when we had to audition, we had to wait in that hallway on the outside of the doors, just pacing while you listen to the person in front of you auditioning.
No.
And trying to remember what you were going to go through and then like kind of listening to them going, that was kind of funny. Oh, that wasn't that funny. Okay, I'm fine. And then the door would just swing and like, next. And then get it. Do your audition on the, you know, the tongue of the stage where the host delivers the monologue and go.
Oh, my God.
So.
Do I just start now?
To an empty studio.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So you're doing comedy for almost for like one guy, basically. Is it just Lorne in there?
Lorne in the shadows. There was like a little panel. And just you could just see a lit ember of a cigarette. Glowing and then not glowing and glowing.
You're trying to judge, is the glowing good?
You literally performed in a vacuum. Now I hear that they go and they watch people do sets at comedy clubs and organic, you know, arenas for being funny. But when we had to do it, it was cuckoo.
Yeah. And do you prefer the schedule of a movie? I don't know if anyone – does anyone really prefer the SNS?
Prefer schedules?
New 90 minutes of comedy every week and you're going to do it live. Go. What?
That was a – once you got used to it, that was a fun schedule. Yeah. But then going back and hosting, I was like, oh, I'm so out of shape. I don't know how I did that for 7 years. So and then a movie is very long, but it's – short spurts, so it's kind of apples and oranges or bananas too. As I look at Jungle Banana ice cream,
it's an old
inspired
Jungle Book
by
sign
from Walt Disney's current great animated movie The Jungle Book.
I'm not sure where I got that, but it was in an antique store and I knew I would be the only person who would buy that.
And they want to make sure that you ask for a taste spoon.
Yeah, that's King Louie, the orangutan, who says ask for a taste spoon as he's shoving a banana in his mouth. So that's a bit of a mixed message. I guess a banana, does he think a banana is a taste spoon? I mean, he is an ape.
I don't know how he's saying
he's
that.
He's a great
too.
Ape, so to him maybe a banana is a spoon.
Yeah,
he doesn't really know what a banana is. Blue bears love bananas. You know, you see him all the time eating bananas. Bear, Blue's got all the bananas.
He can carry so many. he's so huge.
That's why he likes a banana. They make him feel powerful. Yeah, it makes him feel powerful because he can carry so many.
Wait, guy, we're going all over the place.
Anywhere
here.
You want.
Speaking of the Jungle Book,
mm-hmm.
and speaking of SNL,
yes.
So one of the sketches that somehow found its way on the air was the cowbell sketch,
of course,
Christopher Walken, with a very circuitous route. I don't know how it made it on, but it somehow did. That's a side story. But Christopher Walken does the voice in the last Jungle Book of the great orangutan.
Yes.
And as they're trying to I think Mowgli?
Mowgli, yeah.
Steps on a cowbell.
What?
I just noticed it.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So thank you, Jon Favreau,
for making that little... It is amazing that the
homage,
or at least
I'm just making it up in my head.
I'm sure there's
got to be, right.
And that's where you hear everywhere.
Yeah,
that is weird to get the more cowbell notes now, in the At Midnight. We still haven't.
What if I brought up 10 different movies? There's cowbell references,
and then I feel like,
but I'm pretty sure
if you watch Amistad, I'm sure,
right?
There is somewhere in there. But that's very likely.
That was a direct.
That had to be. Because that's the other fun, unpredictable part about comedy is that you can throw yourself into something and think this is going to be the thing.
Yeah.
People are going to fucking make shirts out of it, and it's going to be a movie. Right. And then nothing.
No.
And you go, I don't know, just more cowbell thing. Yeah, and then and then that's the thing people talk about forever.
Sketch that I tried before that no one really laughed at, and then I thought, wait, Christopher Walken, he could do it.
That's him and going, then, ask for a taste spoon.
You know, you're going to want to ask for a taste spoon. That was a terrible Christopher Walken, by the way.
That was Christopher Walken after,
do you
like,
want to put that in special features?
A handful of ambient.
Terrible,
no, we're
gonna, Chris Walken.
We're going to put that in.
Okay.
Well, no, we'll keep it in the main, and then we'll do the commentary. I mean, we do the commentary afterwards. We'll highlight it. I like that part. What was your motivation for terrible Christopher Walken? I just thought, what if Christopher Walken was half dead? What would he sound like? But would you think there's anything to that idea that when you don't put too much preciousness into something, that it just
I think for sure.
Easier?
I mean, I think for sure that kind of recipe, which is not really a recipe, just kind of haphazardly launching yourself into something, usually that's when some cool things happen. And it always, you know, it's like that thing of like, we want it to go viral. Well,
right.
Of course we do. We all do.
So you're saying you want it to succeed.
So make it. So we'll try to make it go. But, you know, the things that go viral were unintentional or slightly intentional or, you know, so. But yeah, I think if you back to baseball.
Mm-hmm.
You can't grip the bat too tightly. It's got to be loose.
How come?
Right?
Why is that?
Well, just so you have more flexibility.
To hit the ball. Hit the ball.
Yeah, got it.
Yeah.
Now the bat's going to go flying out of your hand.
Of course.
50% of the time.
And hit someone.
And strike someone. Yes. And you will be sued.
But.
The result.
Well, that's what I think is.
But
know,
I also, I also love when people are like, how does it feel? Is it going to be funny? I'm like, it's either going to be funny or it's going to be terrible. Well, we don't know. And it's always met with like such disillusionment. Like, oh, well, you don't know for sure? No.
How could you know?
How could you? We never know.
Yeah. You never know what's going to hit on. Hey, Deb, will you run in and turn the air on? Do you know how to do that?
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, just flick it on just because it's going to start getting real toasty in here. Jackets are going to end up coming off. Sweat will be produced.
Do you get? Do people comment on the wallpaper when they
people
come
often
here all
comment
the time?
On the wallpaper? Yeah. A lot. What's funny is a lot of times they don't notice it for a while.
Oh gosh, I notice it right away,
and then they'll go, "Oh, wait, is that?" And it's fuzzy at the same time.
I noticed that. I noticed Popular Science with the home computer.
The new $595
home
computer.
Which is it an Apple? It's not an Apple.
No. That's,
it's like a Commodore.
It's a Commodore. Yeah.
Ah.
This is the Commodore PET.
Okay.
This is from, I don't know what year this is from. Oh, 78. Hmm. 1978. It's from 1978. So you have the first really promising U.S. man-powered aircraft. And you got VW's 60 mile per gallon turbo diesel safety car.
Okay.
You know, when Turbo Diesel, of course, everyone has a Turbo Diesel car now, so they really saw that coming.
And, but it's a safety car.
It's also safe.
Yeah.
At the same time, yeah. These really are. This represents all the different facets of my brain. Star Wars, computers, Ren and Stimpy, Tron,
perfect.
Cartoons, Jungle Book. Oh, you got Chevy Chase up there.
But with Clark
Griswold.
Oh, Clark. Yeah. Got
yeah.
It. I thought it was like for Clark shoes. Because it's the same font.
If you're being
Clark.
Chased, put on your Clarks. Clark. I'm Chevy Chase.
Yeah.
But it was really, I loved seeing in The House, the movie that you're promoting at the moment.
Right.
What a great collection of comedy humans.
Yeah.
Besides Amy Poehler, you also got Jason Mantzoukas. I saw Rob Hubel in there.
Rob Hubel, Nick Kroll. We've got Andrea Savage.
Love her.
Lennon Parham.
Yep.
Yeah, a whole amazing ensemble, which was one of the reasons why, you know, we really wanted to make the movie. You know, first and foremost, that it seemed like a funny and different kind of premise, but also that it kind of had that one of the feelings that I had when we made Old School, which was just a bunch of funny people,
right,
getting to kind of all, you know, share in the madcap.
And do they kind of come in and do like an improv pass? Do they do an improv?
There was plenty of all that. I mean, I think, yeah, everyone was able to kind of get to do their thing, and everyone was subsequently comfortable playing off of that, off of each other, and at which point we sometimes had to, like, we got to move on.
Right.
We're riffing for 2 hours on.
Did we get anything that's written?
Yeah,
no,
yeah, yeah.
But we got to move on.
Yeah.
So hopefully this works.
But Andrew, the director, he was good about kind of figuring out when to kind of head that off and move on. But but you know, that creates such an energy every day when you come to work that everyone's, you know, excited to play and improve upon what's there. And yeah, it was great.
What is it that makes you, what is it in your head that makes you go, hey, here's a thing that is worth me leaving the house, you know, for a few months to go do when I don't have to? I mean, you don't really, if you didn't want to work, you really wouldn't have to. So what is it that motivates you? Like what gets you out to do it?
Yeah, I think it's just, you know, looking for the next thing that feels slightly different from what I've done, you know, previously. Also combinations of work, you know, Amy and I had worked together, once before. I mean, SNL, our overlap was only 1 year, and we had worked on Blades of Glory, but our character arcs kind of really didn't intersect that much. And it was always pitched as Amy and I together.
Right.
And that with the premise of, you know, suburban couple trying to pay for their daughter's college by opening up an illegal casino. I was good. And getting to shoot in Los Angeles. So,
oh, wow. That's incredible.
Yeah. So all of those things put together made it something I really wanted to do.
Was this a Gary Sanchez production?
It was. Yes.
Do you work outside the Sanchez?
I certainly do. But now we're kind of getting so many things brought to us that we end up being part of the producing team regardless. So, and Gary gets a little testy.
Sure. Yeah, I understand.
You know, we'll hear from him.
So a lot of the aggression that you get from him, you pass to me with aggressive at midnight.
And you are so lucky that Gary himself has not come.
So you're really the buffer between us. Because I don't think I've ever actually, I don't think he's ever made an appearance.
He's only been photographed.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah.
So you're really kind of protecting him.
Yes.
Yeah,
for
100%.
Sure. And he doesn't want to meet a lot of people.
No, not at all.
Even though he loves films and television.
He just doesn't like the people. If we could just take the people out of that.
In Paraguay and at his banana farm and ask for a teaspoon. And
I'm gonna have to post a picture of this.
Like, I know.
What the fuck are they talking about? Yeah. Oh, it's this thing. what is your? How much responsibility do you have at between Funny or Die and Gary Sanchez? Like, how involved do you like to be?
Well, it definitely ebbs and flow. I mean, you know, Funny or Die has become with Mike Farah and his whole team and people like Joe has kind of become this, you know, what would you call it? A aircraft carrier,
right?
That's just moving through the ocean, and you know, it really, in a way, runs itself. You know, we kind of chime in every now and then editorially, and they listen to us or they don't. But that's kind of running itself. And then, I'll kind of. It depends. It's hard for me to kind of, in terms of Gary Sanchez, to, you know, look at every script or watch a DVD of a pilot we
sure.
made if we're working. But when it kind of slows down for me and I have time, I kind of try to catch up.
Yeah.
And then there's absolutely times where someone comes up to me and is like, hey, we're doing a project with you. You know, the...
Do you fake it or do you go, I don't know?
I go, I have no idea. Yeah. I fake it. I say, oh, I've been out of town.
Oh, that's good.
I'm like, oh, no, I haven't. I don't know.
No, that's weird because I've been seeing you at the Starbucks.
I don't know what you're talking about. Then I have to send an email. Is there something called Judy's Song that we're producing?
You know, that I feel like that'd be a great way to trick your way into a production if you see Will Ferrell on the street and go, hey, right. we're doing that right, thing. Right, and then Will right. goes, oh, I guess we're doing yeah. that thing. And yeah. then the next yeah. thing, Judy's Song is yeah. winning
is,
the Oscar.
Or on True Television.
Or CISO.
Nothing against True TV.
No, not
yeah,
at all.
Yeah, yeah.
But definitely yeah. not. You couldn't yeah. win an Oscar if you were yeah. on True TV because it's not yeah. the same.
It's not the same.
Not the same platform. Right. And I don't think anyone would be yeah. upset by that.
But yeah, so I have to try to kind of divide my time between, you know, we have three rascally boys at home mm-hmm. that I try to be somewhat of a, you know, a father who's involved
sure.
in their lives. And yeah.
So. How do you raise a friend of mine who is also very successful is like, I'm in this weird place where I want to be able to give my kids all the things I didn't have, but I don't want to turn them into douchebags.
Oh, constant conversation in our household. Yeah. Yeah. We're always, well, you know, you just understand that they're just living a different life than you lived.
Right.
And so you try to address that,
right,
and talk about how lucky you are. Except one of my kids one day was like, "Dad, our house is kind of old." Right? I'm like, no, it's a really nice house. Yeah, but it's kind of old. I'm like, what are you implying that we need to tear it down? Like, no, I love it.
He wanted you to move to like a newer house.
Yeah, I guess. But no, we always have big check-ins like, hey, you guys, just so you know, a lot of kids don't get to do this your age.
You got to just make them get jobs at like 13. Like, well, you're going to have to pay rent now.
And it's met with, yeah. I hear you. But are we going to the box or are we, are our seats on the floor? No.
Are we going to play in this one?
Yeah.
No.
Which is why I love a great kind of equalizer moment is I went to USC and we in the fall go to a couple USC football games and I literally have my tickets in the last row.
Oh, nice.
So the 77th row.
Nice.
And the same middle child who asked said our house was old also said, Dad, are we going to sit in a suite? I'm like, it's the Coliseum. It's a really old stadium. It doesn't have suites. Like, I know, but you don't know that. Are you sure we're not going to sit in a suite? I'm like, I can guarantee you they don't exist and we're in the back.
Is it upsetting to you that your middle child is definitely becoming an agent?
He's now turning the corner.
Though. Okay, good.
Yeah. He's like, he's now has moments where like, Dad, we're really lucky to do this, right? I'm like, we really are and I'm really glad that you're acknowledging that.
So we're going to go in the suite? No, yeah. You can't. You can't.
And because you showed such gratitude, you get to play in the game. with the Lakers. Now, it's only for 30 seconds, but I've spent a lot of money to. But yeah, it's a constant. We're trying to not raise three Hollywood assholes.
Well, because even without any privilege, teenagers just go through the asshole phase because they're testing boundaries, they're experimenting with their identity.
Yeah.
They need to know where they fit in. You know, unfortunately, there's a pecking order, and they try to find where they
live. The other kind of modern manifestation of, you know, our oldest is 13, but he's already heard about this gap year that kids are now taking, right? It's like, Dad, I might do a gap year.
What's a gap year?
That's a lot of kids are graduating from high school, taking a year off, then going to college.
Gotcha.
He's only in seventh grade. He's already talking about
the gap year.
The gap year. And he's like, I might do a gap year. I'm like, oh, okay, yeah. I mean, I could, you know, if you wanted to work, or you know, you get a job, or go work for a charity. Or he's like, what? No, I'm just gonna hang. I'm like, oh yeah, that's not.
Just go to Europe.
Yeah,
you know, just live, for a while.
You can. So that's. That'll be an argument.
Well, you know what's interesting about that is that – so he's in seventh grade now, so he'll graduate in 5 years. To him, 5 years feels like 100 years.
Yeah,
but
for sure.
But to you, 5 years is like, what the fuck? How was it? 2007?
Yeah.
I was just – how are you?
We'll be here before we know it.
Yeah. And so maybe you should be planning the gap year.
I know. I got to – operation stop the thinking about gap years.
Maybe there's some sort of a – Maybe there's a comedy movie somewhere in there where your kid wants a gap year, and so the rich father's like, I know what I'll do. I'll plan to have my own son kidnapped and just treated like shit for a year to try to get to reset his values for adulthood.
I like it.
Do you want me to kidnap your kids for a year?
Oh, no.
Okay, all right.
I meant it in a fictional.
No, people can't see the podcast, but you kind of winked a little bit, so I just
I didn't mean...
Oh, okay.
Literally, dude.
All right. Well, yeah. So wait, are you saying no? Is that just for the podcast audience, or am I supposed to read between the lines?
I'm saying let's talk about this later.
Okay, all right. Yeah. All right. Ow, you're hurting me.
I didn't mean to sit on you.
That's all right. It was a very strange choice.
I didn't mean to stealthily crawl across the table and sit on you.
Silently, but you know, not a lot of room under the table, but you managed to do it. And then get back to your seat for the apology.
Right. Yeah, stay on mic the whole time.
I like improv radio because it's just the idea that it could be whatever. It doesn't matter. Do you miss doing a lot of live stage stuff? You did a tour for a while. Like, didn't you do? Did you do a tour with Andrea Savage? You guys were touring.
We did that once. I did my time at the Groundlings, and then we did that Funny or Die tour. And then I did the Broadway show.
Oh yeah, the W show.
And occasionally I'll do like a charity thing where I'm kind of the host. But I you know, when I really think to like the resume of stage work, I haven't done that much. It's not like I was, you know, when you meet all these guys, everyone from Second City I was on Tourco for 2 years.
Right.
So I don't really view myself as experienced as being on stage as you might think. But the times I've gotten to do it, it's the best. Yeah.
I even think since the short amount of time since you did the Broadway show, it's crazy how much things have changed to the extent that if you were doing that now and it was a Trump show, people would protest, people would be throwing bags of shit at you.
It would be so gigantic. Yeah. It's true. It was kind of a quaint.
We're kind of not cool as a culture anymore. There's like, it's either I agree with this or I'm going to fucking murder you.
Right.
And it does not feel fun or safe anymore. Like that form of satire feels.
No. And I remember going out because when we did the Bush show, we literally did it. Because I had the idea, our first preview night should be on January 20th.
Right.
Inauguration day. And because the whole premise was that so I began every show as if I was being dropped onto the stage out of the helicopter. Is it Marine One? That's the helicopter, right?
I guess so, yeah.
I think that's the helicopter that when the former first family leaves the White House, the new first family waves to them as they board the helicopter and they fly away.
Get out.
Yes. And so I wanted to create the image that I was being lowered literally onto the stage from the White House. And we had an actor playing the Marine, and he unhooked me, and I like gave him a thumbs up, and he wouldn't. He just got pulled back up. So there I was hanging on a wire before every night's performance, going, "Why did I agree to do this?" But I remember people. I remember Chris Rock in particular coming backstage. He goes, "God, you're a brave man for doing that show in front of people." I'm like, "Why?" Because he thought there'd be more protest. Or I think he was implying that someone would run up on stage in protest and tackle me. But there was never a feeling of the audience would play with me,
right?
You know, in terms of like yelling things out from time to time. But there was never a feeling of stepping out there to where, like you said, today's environment.
Not,
if you were playing Trump in a,
yeah,
it'd either be absolutely loved or people be brandishing, you know.
Well, I think also you have
billy
a lot
clubs
of,
or something.
I think you had a lot of credit built up and
yeah,
you get
yeah,
him
yeah.
on the show,
totally.
And so it wasn't out of left field.
And it was in New York where, you know, W wasn't necessarily loved, and
right.
it was definitely a home field advantage. And they were. They literally were thirsting to get to hear something from this fictional president.
Right.
Because he didn't, you know, that if you think about that last year of his presidency, he barely had any press conferences. He kind of just, you know,
remember
hid
that
in seclusion with his 23% approval rating or whatever it was
right.
at the time. And now, ironically, he seems like this kindly sane, you know, voice of reason.
Listen, I can't imagine what – I mean, I can't imagine ever wanting to be president. Even just
right.
wanting to be president feels like you'd have to be a little nuts to want that job. And then what it must do to you.
And yet watching the current situation, there is a part of you, though, that now goes, well, gosh, what I'm watching, I think I could at least – keep a schedule.
If they told her to be.
Listen to the experts.
Read the teleprompters.
Stay off Twitter. Maintain strategic relationships. And start every meeting by going, okay, look, I'm new here. I don't know exactly but can you guys walk me through what should we try to do?
Right.
And then make a decision.
Right.
It may not be great or brilliant, but
no.
We all, I think, have the capacity to do that more than what's happening.
Well, I'm hearing, you know, there are these the mythos of The Rock in
yeah.
2020 is now.
Oh,
building,
oh, really?
Where
I heard some, yeah, is that actually? I had a crazy. Speaking of The Rock, I just finished working on a film out of town in Boston. Happened to stay at a hotel that has a gym in it. That also has a basketball court. So I would notice that the visiting NBA teams playing the Celtics would stay in that hotel because
okay.
they could use that gym to do their, you know, light workout, you know. And so this last round of the playoffs before the finals, the Cavaliers were there because they were playing the Celtics. And I see LeBron James.
Yep.
And I walk up to him because I'm like, well, I got to say hi to LeBron James. I haven't done that one yet. And what comes out of my mouth isn't that, you know, I'm not trying to be funny or talk to him about sports. I'm like, look, I had a conversation with my wife. You need to think about running for president. So it's like we've now been put into this headspace of like, who could run?
Oh, yeah. No. Oh,
yeah.
That's an option now?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah.
Well, now we should just look at everyone.
And he just started laughing. I go, look, I'm not kidding. I'm just planting the seeds here. Look, you're extremely popular. You know, you're very articulate. You're from Cleveland.
Yep.
You know the plight of the Steel Belt and the Midwest, and you came back to Cleveland, your hometown, to play. Just think about it.
There's no
it's
reason.
A great story.
There is no reason that he couldn't that he couldn't do that.
But it just struck me. Oh, that was my opportunity to say hello to Braun. And that's what came out of my mouth.
I feel like you could run in character, and it would still.
But you're right. You do, who wants the scrutiny? Who wants the? You know,
there's just know. Stuff that you.
Yeah.
How could you have it in your head?
Yeah.
I mean, you find out things like, and I think one of the most challenging things for our culture right now is how do you even know what's real anymore? How do you even know what information is real? How do you source it? What's the actual truth? Because I feel like we're all able to sort of build whatever truth we want to see more than any other time in history. So how would you even know if someone told you something? How would you be like, wait, is that real?
Is that how? What do I?
Because they're getting stuff that's not necessarily real and talking about it and going, oh, actually, that turned out to be a fake story. That's not a real thing. Oh, yeah, okay, fuck. I don't even know anymore. Yeah.
So
what would be your first decree as president? What would you do? Decree.
It would be a decree.
It would be decrees
now. Stand on the balcony. What's that little balcony they have up above? Anyway.
I don't know what that is.
I don't even think it faces Pennsylvania Avenue. I think it faces
just the back.
Or just give a decree.
There's no one there. Just a couple of guard dogs in the backyard.
Yeah. What would be my decree? Well, ask for a teaspoon. as we referenced jungle
in every purse
in every pot. And every
well, Will's running on the taste
banana
platform,
ice cream for every.
If you ran on that platform, you would do surprisingly well.
Do you know? You know what? My one thing I don't understand is why, and I've mentioned this to the few politicians who will listen to me, why it isn't a cause that we don't make voting a holiday.
Oh, to vote so that people can go do it.
So in other words, the same way Republicans attacked Obamacare 60-something times and kept trying to repeal it, why don't the Democrats just bring it up every 3 months, a bill that we either get to vote on the weekends or Tuesday is a national holiday?
That's a great idea.
Because it's not partisan. It's just – but the people I've brought it up to say – oh, yeah, I don't know why. But so that's where it makes you go, oh, are they all in cahoots with each other? Like, do they
– I don't even think it's that organized.
Isn't
I think,
it weird, though,
I think
that we don't
– I just think the bureaucracy involved with creating a holiday
– oh, then
is so
– makes people's head spin?
I think – I just think the paperwork and the
– the paper trail.
Getting it up and then but yeah, because who wouldn't want a day off? And also –
that would be a great decree.
That would be an amazing decree.
National, you feel super patriotic, you get the day off.
You go vote.
Then you'd have like a chili party at home. Well, that would be part of the decree.
So that
you can only eat chili.
Only eat chili.
There'd be a cup of chili waiting for you.
Yep. Yeah.
And hot chili.
It would be in an I voted cup.
Right. I voted. People would have chili stains. Oh, I saw you voted.
Oh, yeah, you do. Oh, yeah. Just like the Ash for Ash Wednesday, you see
don't
the chili
go
stains.
Vote
on
at that one polling place.
Oh,
they got terrible chili.
Yeah, bad chili. The bathrooms got wrecked. It was a terrible
idea.
So,
but think about that. We would really look forward to the first Tuesday in November.
And I guarantee, and more people would vote if they didn't have to go to work.
But maybe we can't handle it. Maybe the system would be too many voters and it would clog the system.
When we said we want everyone, we didn't mean like everyone.
We didn't mean like every single person.
Some of you could skip this. Not everyone needs – don't feel obligated.
It's funny though. We go – every summer we go away. My wife has all of her family in Sweden. So we have a little country place in Sweden. And our kids are all fluent in Swedish and – play with their cousins. It's like a great, absolutely perfect getaway in terms of getting out of everything we know.
Yeah,
you know. But so we'll have these sophisticated cultural and political conversations with all the Swedes, you know, after dinner, and they can't understand why, you know, we do it the way we do it.
Of course,
yeah, in various facets, you know. But we talked about voting. They're like, oh, yes. But the Swedes are always so nonchalant. Like, yes, we get an entire week to vote.
What?
So therefore, you have no excuse. You can vote at any point once, you know. And and subsequently they have, you know, 80-90% turnout or whatever. They also only have 9 billion people, but
yeah, I think part of the problem is just the size of America. It's just we're 350 million people. How do you especially more and more as we go into an era of everything needs to be exactly the way that I envision it my specific specifications times 350 million. So it's just an impossible time. But that's I don't know why we don't give people less excuses. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it goes back to some obscure thing that happened in the beginning. Right. Like, well, this is what they did back then.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was like, well, maybe we should re-examine. Sweden sounds great, though. I would love to go to Sweden. Where do I go?
Just go to Stockholm.
Okay.
Yep.
And then that's it?
Yeah.
I'm here! Where do I...
Go to Stockholm and drive for about an hour southwest.
All right.
And then just text me. And I'll pick you up. Or you can take the train station. You can take the train, and I'll pick you up at the train station.
Oh, that's really nice of you. Yeah. I appreciate that. Yeah. When you pick me up, am I going to get more notes about the show?
Oh, no, no.
Okay.
That's vacation. We're off the clock.
Okay,
we're
good.
I'll be the nicest version of me that you've ever seen. You'll be like, God, I wish this Will would show up more, would show up at the show. And then, you know, we probably have conversations like, I got to be honest with you. It's so nice to hang out with you in this setting.
Sure.
You're such a nicer version of yourself.
Right.
You know, the after midnight version of Will.
But then my question
is an a-hole.
Yeah, but then does it, because what if we really connect?
Yeah.
Once we come back from Sweden, is that all over? And then it's back to the...
There could be a newfound understanding.
Okay.
You could have planted the seeds of, you know, an evolution... You know, in the way I handle my business as a producer.
I appreciate that.
Or I could use it against you. You never know.
Shit.
Yeah.
So this is...
In a very Trumpian way, I could I could become your worst enemy.
You said I could tell you anything.
I didn't mean
anything.
Yeah.
I didn't want to hear.
Don't be don't be ridiculous.
Take everything so little.
Like, I don't know, dude. Now, come on. I notice... last night's show.
I noticed no headbands. Where
are the headbands? How many times do I have to say it?
Do I need to write it on your head so you have to cover it up with a headband?
Do I have to come on the show and put it on your head?
Yes.
During the taping.
Yes, you do. That'd be really funny if you just didn't say a word.
And it's a reference to this podcast
that no one ever at some point, just for fun, you just...
I will do it.
Just put on a headband, walk
I will
off.
Do it.
Won't even reference it.
And I'll just look into the camera and go, you know why.
Oh, my God. He was serious.
Oh.
Are you good at keeping your it seems like you'd be really fun to work with on a movie or something. Do you set the tone?
It seems like you're fun. You'd be fun.
It seems like you'd be fun to work with. You know.
I think I've been told I do set the tone. Yeah, I mean, I'm always, you know, like I said, outside of having allergies, some severe head cold or something. Yeah, I'm usually showing up to work every day, kind of, you know, getting the team together and making sure everyone's...
If anyone's an asshole, do you ever feel like you have to overcompensate?
Well, that's really interesting because I don't know if I've come up against that situation, you know, and I don't know if it's because of when you work on comedies predominantly, people are usually just, you know, that kind of, you know, in between setups as they move the camera, usually riffing on or saying hello or what'd you do this weekend or,
right.
Or, doing bits behind the camera and so it doesn't usually lend itself to that kind of asshole person showing up. And if they're there, they usually read the room and don't surface.
Got it.
Yeah.
Well, I think also you for so long, you've gotten to work on kind of your own productions.
Yeah.
So we usually know. I feel like you have a lot of control
exactly.
Over,
we usually
over what
have
happens.
The same team of people a lot of times. But even from having that cliche kind of, oh, that person was not a happy camper. We've never really come up against it.
Oh, that's good. Have you ever thought about just going after some really dramatic role in some, you know,
King Lear?
Yeah, yeah, like in King Lear, for example.
Specifically King Lear?
Specifically King Lear.
Thank you.
Have you ever thought about...
Thank you for teeing that up.
Have you ever thought about Gary Sanchez?
I will be opening at the La Jolla Playhouse. One night only.
But in a movie, like, have you ever think...
I'm still not off book.
I would have... we are going to have our scripts in our hands.
Yeah.
It's no... It's not... You can't expect people to memorize this. They just talk so weird. But have you ever thought about doing that?
What? It's... I end up sounding... like I have no ambition whatsoever, because I get that question. I literally was was at dinner last night with some people. Someone was like, "What's your dream job? What's the one thing you haven't done yet?" And I was like, "I don't know."
But I think that's a healthier attitude.
Yeah, I things just usually kind of pop into my head. I'm like, "Oh, that could be fun to do," but I don't know if I have that one thing still sitting out there. The times I've gotten to do dramatic work, it's been so much fun, and you know, I'm still kind of searching for those types of projects. But you know, no matter how high you go up in the food chain, you're still put somewhat in a box of what you can do. And, and the times I've gone after specific things that were a little a deviation, it's like, we love him. Don't get us wrong. We just don't know.
We're going to go with Daniel Day-Lewis on this one.
Or it's like, oh, I love that idea. Let me check with the 8 other people. And then you never heard back.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you want to check with them now and put me on hold?
Well, yeah, because I'm happy to wait.
It'll take a minute.
So, yeah, I'd like to do more of that. At the same time, I don't take myself serious enough to have to, like...
Well, yeah, that's... I mean, I always
be
like...
Be believed in that regard.
I like to use you as an example of someone whose career I very much admire and aspire to. It's like, yeah, Will does whatever he feels like he wants to do. Like, there's no... I don't ever feel like anything you do go, someone probably made him do this. Like, he wanted to do this beer commercial, or he wanted to do this, or he wanted to make internet videos on Funny or Die. It just...
Yeah.
It's such a great way to lead.
The way we've tried to approach it, and luckily the people I've worked with representative wise have never tried to kind of do the agency thing of like, over here, this could be big.
Right.
And 'cause I've usually gone, I don't know. That seems terrible. And sometimes it is, and sometimes it's huge and you should have done it. But yeah, I've just for the most part gone with my gut and try to do interesting, different, weird things. And then other things are just totally blatantly commercial and super fun in that regard. And so it's fun to just kind of mix it up.
I don't think – when I hear people go, I turned this thing down and then ended up becoming the hugest thing, I always think, well, but maybe –
You don't
know if that would have happened.
And exactly. And if you were in – if I had accepted that, maybe it doesn't work for whatever reasons. And,
right.
Yeah.
Or maybe it keeps you from doing something else that actually is your thing. But I think the important thing is just to not be worried about what everyone else is doing. It's such a weird – because we just have no way of measuring
– Yeah.
I mean, I guess you can measure it like, I made X amount of dollars this year, or I was in this many movies this year. But it's still hard to – gauge, like, and am I doing right? Am I doing good? I don't know.
Hard, you know, and that is a hard thing to remember to suppress that jealousy of other people in comedy.
Right.
Because if you can admire so many different people and it can drive you crazy, like, I'm not as funny as them. But you just have to trust that what you do is unique and, you know.
And everyone's kind of got their own.
Yeah.
Stuff going on
and
in their head.
And if it's so funny when you walk up to people like, God, I loved what you did on, you did? Wow. I hated it. Or I didn't even know anyone saw it, you know? So yeah, we're all in our own little bubbles.
Comedy Central had a comedy festival this weekend. And, I did a set and I thought it was okay. Yeah. I hadn't done stand up in a few weeks and I felt off. And then I saw a comic that I adore, and I thought he had an amazing set. And I was talking to him after, and she was like, I don't know. I felt weird. I didn't like, oh, my God, it never ends.
What are you talking about? Yeah,
it never ends.
Yeah, you got to turn that thing off.
But I feel like some of it's good to motivate you, right?
True.
To do better.
That's true.
But I guess not to the extent that it completely debilitates what you're trying to do.
Right.
Do you just have a folder of stuff
of ideas that you've written down that you're like, we got to make this at some point. We got to make this.
Yeah, I've got kind of a, I've got some things that are like being worked on. Some things that are like, oh, I got to get to that. But then there are other ideas that I have, which then you're like, ah, this is a good idea. I think this is good, but it makes me tired. Thinking about the execution, you know, I'm like, ah, because when we talked about stage, I had an interesting idea. I was working in London, and I was driving through the West End, and I remember when we did, coming back to that Bush show that I did on Broadway, we talked about how, oh, that'd be fun to do it in the West, do it in London, and see what the different reactions were, play to a British audience. And I was driving with my assistant. I'm like, gosh, we're driving through the theaters, and I'm like, I have a really good idea, but I'm afraid to say it out loud because everyone will be like, you got to do it. You got to do it like right now. And I don't know how to mount it. And I don't know, but I was like, God, we should do George Bush now and just do a one set idea where it's just a living room or a, I don't know. And it's George Bush and Tony Blair just shooting the shit and commenting on what's happening now, commenting on the mistakes they made or whether they thought they were mistakes or not. And everyone was like, that is great. And I even talked to, Michael,
Sheen.
Yeah. Michael Sheen, who's played him multiple times. He's like, sure, I'll do it.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And so, but now I'm like, oh, okay.
That's a lot of work.
I got to write it.
What are they going to talk about?
How do I tell my wife? Well, I'm going to be gone for 6 months in London. Yeah. So anyway.
You like England, right?
I do. Yeah, honey.
Yeah.
But anyway, so
the kids think our house is old. We'll put them in an older house in England.
So I have a lot of ideas like that that are, yeah.
Well, so where do you sort of fall on either side in terms of
how do they get pushed to the front?
Well, yeah. Like where do you go? Okay, well, I still have ambition to do things, but also I don't want that to get in the way of leading a happy life.
Yeah, it's kind of listening to that, and it's also a little bit of chance and opportunity, and you know, a set of circumstances will push one idea. All of a sudden, it'll be like, oh. It's now become clear we should try to do this at this time.
Yeah.
And and in fact, yeah, we're kind of going through that right now. I'm really Adam McKay is going on to do this movie that he's written about Dick Cheney.
Mm-hmm.
But we also did a rewrite on a script that we're producing, but we ended up rewriting the entire thing. About two guys who go down to protect the border.
Okay.
Yeah. Written hopefully for myself, definitely for myself. Hopefully. Hopefully I...
You're going to cast yourself?
Hopefully I didn't really make the cut. You know what? I watched the tape. I'm sorry, Will.
I'm just not feeling confident about me in this role. Yeah. I'm going to check with 8 other people.
Keep in touch.
Yeah. You have my email.
But it's your email. For John C. Reilly and I to be kind of two misguided guys who are trying to fix our border situation.
Oh, that's incredible.
And so I'm trying to get Adam to go back to back to direct that because I think that's something that it would be so timely and funny and a great chance of some fun satire.
And he's very focused on politics at the
moment.
He's,
and Adam's really in a space now where – and I totally agree with him where he just wants to – whether it's drama or comedy, he wants things that say things.
Right.
That make a statement. So,
right.
So I'm like, what about
– what if we
– just do a quick edit and then you jump right back in. So hopefully we can that'd be a blast.
I think in terms of the thing with Michael Sheen, I think if you just set aside a couple hours with him at some point and you just riffed as those characters – you'd see if it was there or not.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I think then it would
and
be.
And yet sometimes I'm I have the most success where I don't outline anything and I just start writing and
right.
I meander and that allows me to not, you know, have it be too structured in a way that's debilitating.
Right.
And, well, they should get up here and they should say this, or they should, you know, when I do that, sometimes I just, all of a sudden they're singing a karaoke song together.
Right.
For no reason.
Absolutely.
And, oh, that could be really funny on stage, you know, and then get back into the conversation, you know. So, yeah.
When you don't overthink it, it kind of
yeah.
is the best.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Do you have any, I'm being told that you have 2 minutes because at 3 o'clock something happens. I don't know what happens. I think you have to.
You're going
to
be so excited.
What is it? Is it my taste spoon?
It's, you're going. You're finally getting.
Oh my God.
You're getting a gold plated taste spoon.
Oh, gold plated.
Yeah. Yeah.
Someone's a good
boy. It's like
boy.
Instead of a key to the city, you're getting
a
taste spoon.
That's so funny. Is it the taste spoon to Los Angeles then?
It's. God, I didn't even think of it. We didn't. We just got a taste. Yeah, I guess it's just the
you
taste
only have
spoon.
About 90 seconds to
it's
sort
the
out whatever
taste
this
spoon to, you know, any delicious adventure you want to go on.
Wow,
yeah.
That could be any city.
Yeah, yeah.
That's just my
yeah.
your town, USA. A taste spoon to adventure.
Taste spoon to adventure. By the way, Disney, if you're listening to this, don't steal that and make yes. a ride out of it.
Because Disney was just like, oh, he said not to do it.
And if you want to, it's Chris and I's idea.
We okay? own a piece
yeah.
of that.
Yeah.
We own a piece of that delicious
in fact,
spoon.
If you want to make a ride out of it, we're happy to
yeah,
sit down
got,
and talk. Why am I
tons of time?
Why am I getting after Disney?
I don't
Please,
know.
Come
I don't
to us.
Know. Yeah, yeah. It's
Please
okay.
Come to us.
Hey, Disney, it's fine. We're around. We got some time in between things.
Taste spoon to adventure? Is that
taste
what it's called?
Taste spoon to adventure, was it? Taste
or
spoon
happiness?
To adventure? Taste spoon to adventure, I think it was. A delicious taste spoon to adventure. So whatever that means to you, you know, because I know Disney has like staff writers like they did in the 40s.
Right.
So
just sitting around.
Yo, get on this.
Yeah.
Hey, Scoops, get on this.
Sponsored by Del Monte.
Sponsored by Del Monte and Winston Cigarettes.
Yes.
Jungle Book is sponsored by Winston Cigarettes.
A clean, cool smoke.
Now banana flavored. All right. Well, it was very nice of you to come by again. I assume that you have a lot of press because the movie's coming out, The House.
This is the beginning.
Out.
This is our first foray into press.
Into your long.
Yes.
But not long, probably, just like a quick burst, I would imagine.
A concentrated 2.5 weeks.
2.5 weeks of.
Of wonderful appearances.
Going on.
And discussions.
Going, doing press junkets and coming up with viral clips. All
clips
sorts of fun clips of viral.
And. Crazy fun stories.
Will, could you do something viral for it? What? I don't. What am I supposed to? I mean, I could shit
absolutely.
On, if I shit on the floor, that
absolutely.
Would go viral. Do you mean that? Is that what you mean?
Poop in this cup. But that's already been done, right? Two girls, one cup.
They
already did that.
Shit. Any good idea? Someone's already done.
That's why you got to jump on it.
Two guys, though.
Two guys, six cups?
You know what? People love gender swapping.
Okay.
So what if we gender swap?
It's a play on two girls, one cup.
And it's the,
wait for it.
Two guys, one teaspoon.
Oh man.
Really
oh, no.
Disney, cut that last part out of your memories as we are doing this adventure. But thanks for being here, man.
No,
it's good to
thank
see you,
you
again. I look forward to getting more notes from you next week.
This has been enlightening for me because maybe I have been coming down too harshly. On you.
Well, it's not really my pay grade to say that.
So maybe I'll reevaluate how I approach producing.
Well, we'll see.
Yeah.
You know, we'll spend some time in Stockholm and we'll see how it goes.
Don't get your hopes up.
I know. More headbands.
Yeah.
More headbands. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, enjoy your burrito, everyone.
Okay.
And just see if I can find a headband. Fuck.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
This episode of the Nerdist Podcast is brought to you by Norton Core, a secure Wi-Fi router for the connected home. Get the security you need and the speed you want with Norton Core. Go to norton.com/nerdist to save $30 if you pre-order before August 1st.